But if you want to raise the bar and you want change, you just can't be afraid of everything that comes with it.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Becky Talks Parks, a podcast for parks and recreation professionals who are passionate about raising the bar in the field. I'm so excited to bring you episode number 6. Today, we're talking to Anthony Iraki from the city of Deerfield in Wisconsin. Hang tight, we're going to be talking about professional development, and this is a perfect episode whether or not you're a young professional or a current professional leading others. I believe that Anthony is truly raising the bar because he reminds us to put our mental and physical health first, because that's actually the key to serving our community best. And he also reminds us that by putting fun back into our job, we're going to feel more motivated long term, because that's what Parks and Recreation is all about. And I think in this episode, you're really going to take away how current leaders can prepare the next generation, and also steps that students and young professionals can take to work their way up in the field. And just a small hint, it's all about connection and bonding with other people. And finally, we're going to talk about what culture creators can do and how they can have a positive impact on your community if you have the mindset and the right attitude in terms of partnering and collaboration. If you like this episode, please share it with your friends and leave a review on iTunes so that more people can find the show. I am very excited today to be talking with Anthony Iraki. Anthony is a recreation supervisor at the Village of Brown Deer in Wisconsin, and today he's going to be talking to us all about professional development in the field of parks and recreation. So I am super excited to talk to him about some of his philosophies around personal and professional development and what current professionals can do to encourage the next wave of leaders in the field. So I'm very excited. Anthony, thank you for being on the show.
Yeah, and thank you for having me, definitely.
Great. So, Anthony, do you want to give us some background as far as who you are and what led you into the field of parks and recreation?
Yeah, so I've actually worked in parks and rec my entire life. When I was younger, my first ever job was scorekeeping for men's municipal basketball and softball leagues. And then from there, I kind of went and worked at the pool as an attendant. And eventually I worked my way up to an assistant manager at the pool, and that kind of launched my career afterwards. You know, so it's always been a part of me. It's always been, you know, the main place I've worked. And I grew up on a lake in Michigan, and so I always had that kind of up north environment in my backyard. So I spent a lot of time on the water, a lot of time in the woods behind my house, just being outside in nature. And so that's always been a part of my development, and it was just kind of a natural fit. Then when it was time for me to grow through everything and choose a career, that, you know, I'd start looking at aquatics because that's where I came up. And then things just kind of progressed from there and moved to where I am today.
That's great. So what are you doing today? What do you do on a day-to-day basis?
So that's a good question. You know, I wear a lot of hats in my current role. And so I actually took on this role because I came from a school district, community-based recreation, and I wanted something a little bit more traditional. So right now in Brown Deer, you know, I work with the parks, I help with the maintenance of the parks, preparing the fields for sports and getting everything up and going, helping with special events. I work with seniors, I work with summer camps, I work with all sorts of family and enrichment and youth and adult community center programming. And so in terms of scope, it's actually the most diverse job I've ever had, which is interesting because in terms of size, it's actually the smallest position I've ever worked with. Previously, you know, I worked as an aquatics director for the Y for a number of years. And then when I worked at Milwaukee Recreation, I was siloed in the community center area. So I mainly just did youth and adult enrichment and then had a summer playground in the summer. So coming to Brown Deer, I really wanted to wear a few more hats and kind of get that well-rounded park and rec experience that I hadn't gotten before, especially in the fields of parks and park maintenance and trails and everything that goes into it.
Gotcha. So it sounds like you wear a lot of hats, like a lot of parks and recreation professionals. And I think it's neat that you get to be in a smaller community, because it sounds like maybe you have a little bit more impact and you're more in touch with the people that you're serving.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I went from serving a population, I want to say around 250,000, because I had kind of the north and northwest side of Milwaukee, so half of the city, which is about 500,000, stretched out up and down, you know, different roads all the way from right near downtown to the furthest northwest corner of the city. And now I'm down to a population of about 12,000. And what's interesting is Brown Deer actually borders the city of Milwaukee on two sides. So it kind of took what I did before and brought it down to a much smaller scope. But you're right. You know, I deal with or work with a lot of people that are very bought in, people that have a lot of passion for the community, the young people all the way up to the seniors. Everyone has a lot of heart for the village. And so it's very much a shift going from a large, you know, kind of metro area down to something a bit smaller, but it puts me in contact with everyone that can really make a difference. And you learn pretty quick who the key players are and who you get to work with and who can really move the needle when the time comes.
That's a great point. And one thing that I noticed that's probably related to that is that you're very involved with a lot of professional organizations and your state association. So can you talk about why you're involved with those and how that maybe helps you in your either your personal development and being able to relate that back to your job, or maybe it's just the steps that you're taking because you're trying to reach your long-term goals?
You know, so at the end of the day, the goal is always community impact. And so as much as I like to do stuff for myself as a lifelong learner to make myself better and, you know, open doors down the line in my career, the ultimate goal is always that if I go through trainings or professional development, or if I network or do a number of things that occur inside the state association and nationally, I'll be able to take that and take those skills and apply it to my job and come up with some new and innovative programming, develop my staff around me, and really just move the needle in Brown Deer and make sure that the needs of the community are being met, because at the end of the day, that's my job, is to help people recreate, help people love where they live. And so the more I invest in myself, the better I can do that. And then everything else that comes along with it, be a promotion or career move or something, is a residual effect. But it's not my main goal to set out just to make myself better, to make myself better, to look good, essentially.
Really powerful, because as parks and recreation professionals, we have the opportunity to reach out to our community in a way that a lot of people don't, and to provide a service that is truly unique. And one thing that you said that struck out to me is, yes, we are, you're personally developing yourself, and you have to do that first, because then that allows you to spread your gifts and to share what you have learned with others. So when it comes to personal growth, what are some ways that you're challenging yourself to keep learning and to keep growing? And maybe it's some resources or books or podcasts that you're listening to right now, but how do you keep yourself constantly learning?
You know, coming from an aquatics background, I saw the value in certification right away. So when you're younger and you get that CPR cert and lifeguarding and, you know, your swim instructor certification, that in itself kind of opens doors. And it sets you apart, because as anybody that's listening to this in aquatics knows, there's always kind of a demand for lifeguards that are out there. You look into the next step with that and you can become an instructor. Now you can market yourself a little bit better. You can take the lessons you've learned. You can teach other individuals how to, you know, be an instructor or how to be a lifeguard, or teach other individuals how to teach lessons or how to save a life. That impacts the community. So I'm always big on certs, and, you know, currently I have my certified park and recreation professional, CPRP, considering CPRE as well down the line. I went back to school for my master's degree in business management. And so these things that you can kind of get along the way and really take with you. Now, you know, a piece of paper doesn't always designate, obviously, your ability to participate in lifelong learning. And so outside of that, you know, we have conferences, we have things that go on. In Wisconsin especially, we have a leadership academy, we have a spring workshop, an aquatics workshop, we have our annual conference. And so just going to sessions, being on the cutting edge of everything, listening to people talk, taking what they say and asking yourself, how is this scalable? How can I take what they're doing in their community, the lessons they've learned, and how can I take that back and give that back to my community as well? Being involved in networks with NRPA, they have the Young Professionals Network, the Leadership Development. Here in Wisconsin, we have all sorts of networks as well. I actually currently chair the Young Professionals Network, and we work with our foundation, our aquatic section, parks, recreation. So just being involved in your associations, talking with other people, networking, building upon each other, challenging each other, because a little competition does go a long way. Who can, you know, maybe who can get that park up and running, who can have that new innovative program, who can do something really cool. But, you know, challenging each other and then celebrating each other's successes at the end of the day as well, too, because we're all in this together. We're all have the same mission behind us. And then outside of that, I'm fortunate in Milwaukee because we have a group called Newwaukee, which does a Young Professionals Week. We have this group called Fuel, which does a professional development boot camp. And there's leadership luncheons and all these other ways to be involved in the city and just learn. It's almost like an annual conference in the city that happens in parks and museums and really cool event spaces. And then when you take that and you put the networking into it, it's the conversations that you have with your colleagues where you can really grow beyond just that classroom. And so one thing that always stood out to me is I went to the NRPA conference in St. Louis a couple years ago, and a guy named Marvin Anderson was there, and I hope he hears this at some point. I'm going to share it and probably tag him in it. But we had an amazing conversation. We were in the process of starting a men's midnight basketball league in Milwaukee, and he was telling me how, you know, a lot of the guys that he works with, some of the things that they miss is that maybe they're that star athlete when they were younger, maybe they had dreams of something more. Things don't work out the way they expect them to, and so they carry maybe a chip on their shoulder because of that. But through the adult leagues, they keep stats, they post updates, they really celebrate when these guys do something great. And so it becomes something where they talk about it, and they kind of regain a little bit of that glory that they had before, and they can say, oh, did you see, you know, how I did in the game this week with it, you know, if it's flag football or basketball or anything that else that goes into it. And it really creates that buy-in. And that was great information that I took. And we looked at, you know, for our adult midnight basketball league, like, let's get a statistician. You know, let's get somebody in here that can help out and really celebrate what these guys are doing. Because that is an element that maybe I never really thought about when it came to adult leagues. I knew that they were recreational. And for some individuals, they're bar leagues and they're just fun. And you go out there and you have a good time. But for some people, you dig a little deeper and it's a way to really reach further into who they were before and where they want to be now as an individual. And so I would have never thought that way if I didn't take the time to go to conference and, you know, see it as a 360 learning environment, that the conversations you have with people one-on-one are just as important as the person who's talking to you in the classroom during the day.
That's such a powerful story because we support our youth programs so much and encourage them to be active and to go outside and play and meet new people and to be competitive. And that's part of the fun of it. And then as we grow up, we kind of lose some of that. But I know for me, growing up and playing competitive soccer, that was some of the best times of my life. I so appreciated that time to be able to compete. And so it's great to hear that story that you told about just bringing that into adult sports. And that's something unique that parks and recreation departments can offer and continue that lifelong activity and participation. And it really demonstrates how just those small conversations one-on-one can really make a big impact. And you can just, like for me, whenever I go to conferences, I'm just trying to pick out one or two ideas from and take that back. And it sounds like you're doing an excellent job at bringing as much value as possible back into your community.
Yeah, definitely. It's great. I mean, you know, I really enjoy the networking piece and the conversations that occur. And, you know, anybody, you know, that's listening to this and, you know, what drives me is just creating those bonds with people and talking and bouncing stuff off each other and having something outside of your immediate echo chamber to push it off of, especially, you know, Milwaukee, the metro area, you know, we're the largest metro area in the state. And sometimes at our state level, it's a challenge for us to find people that see the same topics that we want to talk about, because Wisconsin does, outside of Madison and Milwaukee, tend to be more rural. And so when you get to NRPA, you get a chance to talk to somebody from St. Louis or Chicago or Baltimore or Boston or any of these places and really say, hey, you know, I feel like maybe what you guys are working with or some of the things that I could work with, what works for you, what's different. And, you know, let's keep this conversation going after we walk away from it. And then you take that to conference calls and you take that to networks and you take it to podcasts like this. And you just continue to share that information and really support the industry from the bottom up.
Absolutely. I love this field because people are always, it's never about them. Like, it's never about the individual. It's always about the greater purpose. And when you know that you're serving the community, and when you really look at it, it's really just, it's the world, which sounds kind of crazy, but I think we're both on the same page that parks and recreation truly can change the world if we're able to share and we're able to collaborate and bring the very best ideas to the table. So I'm glad that we share that same passion. Let's talk about professional development and what opportunities do you feel like the current professionals, so those that have been in the field for quite a while now, maybe they stumbled into it, maybe they worked their way up, but we're talking about the people who have been in the field for a very long time. How did those people start to encourage the younger parks and recreation professionals and the students to really grow and become the best leaders they can be?
You know, I thought about this question, and the biggest thing that they can do is share their knowledge and their experience and take on a mentee. You know, there's mentoring programs through NRPA. There's other mentorship opportunities, and just really, you know, even if it doesn't have to be something formal that's put together by another organization, but if you're, you know, an older professional in the field and you see somebody who's on the come up or somebody that has some ability about them or somebody who's maybe just kind of rough around the edges and could use some guidance either way, reach out and say hello and introduce yourself. And, you know, at one point, you know, you were a young individual yourself, and I feel confident saying that most people I've met who have been successful had somebody along the way that took them under their wing and helped them out and shared that information with them and the lessons learned, and they were a sounding board. And so that's the biggest thing for me, you know, is you've got all this history, you've got all this knowledge, you've been through some changes, and maybe, you know, you saw changes come with internet or technology or computers, or, you know, back in the day it was done this way and then you had to adapt. And so maybe the way I have to adapt is a little different, but at its core, it's still, how do you get on the front end of that? How do you answer those tough questions and make those tough calls? And when the time to make the, you know, those tough decisions comes about, it's helpful to have somebody who you can reach out to, who understands, who's been there before. So I really think that, you know, if you have the opportunity to take someone under your wing and work with them, you should. But then at the same time, professional development is a 360 process. If you're a young professional working in the field, you can look left and right and think, how can I encourage my colleagues to do something different? How can I get them to come with me to a session or a speaker? Or how can I get them to read this book or this article or listen to this podcast? And then look, you know, at your structure, that's what's below you as well. And I, you know, who reports to you? Do you have a high schooler who's on the up and up? Do you have a college student? Right now, I identified somebody on my team who's a senior in high school, who's ambitious, is responsible, is driven, communicates well, does all these things. And I said, look, do you want to get your lifeguard instructor? Do you want to help me out with this? You know, I want senior guards at the pond this summer to be LGI, and you're the first person I thought of. And they jumped at that opportunity. And so, you know, we as individuals just need to be aware of who's around us, because that just ultimately makes operations better. It makes our community better. It keeps the field strong. And I know sometimes people say, well, staffing's an issue, this, that, and the other. Well, what opportunities are you giving your staff to move up? How are they buying in? Because now I have an LGI who is going and driving all around town, putting flyers up to recruit, sending me people, doing kind of quick interviews at school, like, hey, have you heard of this? Are you interested? Okay, great. Here's some base questions. I'm going to send you to talk to my boss. And that's just how you work and you continue to grow. So I encourage anybody who is beyond that young professional age to reach out, either officially or unofficially. I encourage young professionals to don't discount yourself as a mentor, because there's always somebody that can learn from you.
So would you say that leadership, especially in our field, doesn't necessarily come from the top, and it comes from anyone who's just willing to step up and take on the job? Or like, how do you define leadership, and what are you looking for when it comes to the traits of your employees?
Yeah, I mean, I think that anybody can lead from anywhere, especially, you know, and I've talked about this too on the Mentoring Professional Recreators page on Facebook and some other areas as well, is that, you know, you've got some people that are in positions that have been there for a long time, and maybe retirement is on the horizon, but still they're on the horizon. So you've got some longstanding pillars in the field. You've got some people that are Gen X that have kind of been waiting their turn to step into a few roles. And then you've got the, you know, quote unquote, ever ambitious millennials, which we are, but people like to typecast us as we just want to shoot straight to the top. You know, just kind of swimming around down here, and, you know, we want to get the ball rolling and get a move on things. And so I think that instead of playing into that stereotype of walking into your boss's office and saying, I want your job, you look at your strengths. And so me personally, it's like, okay, I know my strengths. I'm good with tech. I know how to be efficient. You know, we talked a little bit earlier about how scope-wise this job is broad, but size-wise it's a bit smaller. So that means I can get things done quickly, right? And there's probably a lot of my colleagues out there that move fast as well. And so then instead of being frustrated in your lot, you take a look at it and say, okay, I see changes that can happen. I see how I can utilize the technology, the skill set, the information that I've learned to make a difference. And you approach respectfully whoever you need to approach. And you have those conversations and you put ideas forward. And you just foster teamwork, and then people will start to look at you as a leader in your department and your community. And that's okay if you're just the recreation supervisor, or you're just a coordinator, or maybe you're even just an intern. I don't think that any hierarchical structure should ever limit you from taking a chance to make a change that you see, because I think that what you'll find is if you do it appropriately and respectfully, people will respond to that. One of the biggest undertakings I ever did in professional development was I led a professional development committee when I worked for Milwaukee Recreation. And this committee was tasked with setting up learning communities and professional development opportunities for our entire department, director down, right? So the way my committee and I approached it as a team is first we did a 360 evaluation. So we had everyone get feedback from somebody that worked for them, somebody at their level, and their direct supervisor, and then they asked others around them. So when that was all put together, we analyzed the results. We found that there were four core areas where all of us could be a little better. So we set up learning communities for them. And people could select a learning community, and inside the learning community, people could take on leadership roles. And we wanted these people to take on leadership roles who weren't just, you know, the coordinators, which in that structure, coordinators were almost near the director level. That wasn't the director, and that even wasn't even a manager. We said, hey, if you're an entry-level full-time employee or supervisor, but you're passionate about this core competency, you can step up and people will work around you and we'll give you that leadership experience. And it worked, and people responded to it. And as teams, our department got better and they met, and we had everything go through with it. And at the end of it, we talked to people to find out what worked and what didn't work and what could change. But it just goes to show that just because somebody is a director or an assistant director or whatever level of the organization doesn't mean that they are always the de facto leader. Leadership is situational. Leadership can come from anyone. And you just have to not be afraid to fail, to step up, and to know when to push and know when to take and step back. And I think that that will only make wherever you work, your community better and everything better for it. So when you ask me, you know, what does it mean? What are the leadership traits I look for? You know, I look for people that are willing to take chances, people that are willing to act on their ideas, and people that are willing to be told no. And instead of getting upset about it, they go back and try to think, well, why was I told no? And maybe they can readdress that situation. And I think that if you're that type of person, it doesn't matter where you are, but you can step into that role and people will follow you.
I think you bring up a great point about what leadership really is. And if we can just push past the no's and figure out how we can get it done within some of the policies that are in place, then that's when we can make an impact. But for millennials and the next generation who are about to become those leaders, I think that there's a natural impatience there because we like to see progress. So what tactical approaches would you suggest for those young leaders coming in so they can kind of push past that red tape and make progress?
Yeah, you know, I mean, you're right. Like, we do tend to, you know, maybe be restless. We want to keep moving and moving forward. But you're right. Sometimes, depending on the agency you work for, there could be rules in place and there can be some bureaucracy and some red tape, and things tend to move a little bit slower. And so it is an exercise in patience, and it's remembering, you know, what can I accomplish today that plays into that long term. And, you know, honestly, Parks and Rec can be pretty political. And so sometimes you do have to think of yourself as a politician. You have to consider maybe what you've learned in public policy classes and getting, you know, the right people to agree with you and go along with it and move through it. And so it can be a challenge, but the only advice I have is to just keep, you know, that big picture in front of you, keep thinking towards the goal, and understand that it's a marathon, it's not a sprint, and that a lot of change takes time. And I think that, again, that goes back to what I talked to before, having a mentor to bounce stuff off of. Chances are any mentor you might have has gone through something similar. They wanted to make a change, they wanted to see this happen, and maybe it took them even longer. They had some other challenges, but they can go through and guide you. I think that going at it alone is not good. I think that you should also utilize whatever networks you have. So a lot of times I'll reach out to the NRPA YPN, ask questions. What has everyone else gone through? Or my own WPRA YPN, and ask people what they've gone through. And you'll get a lot of really good feedback, and just have a plan and have patience and take the victories where you can. You know, it's like the YPN, the Young Professional Network in Wisconsin. A lot of stuff moved kind of quick for us, and then a lot of stuff has taken time. And I remember talking to one of my colleagues about it and just saying we have to celebrate the small victories and keep moving forward. And that's where we've been, and we've been successful with that.
Absolutely. I think that the small wins are, in the long term, quite big because they help you reach those long-term goals. So what advice would you give to young professionals or maybe students who don't even know that they could pursue a career in Parks and Recreation? What advice would you give to them if they possibly have interests that align with the field of Parks and Recreation?
You know, I guess it's an interesting question to ask somebody like me because I actually don't have a degree in Parks and Recreation. It was just something that was a lifestyle for me, and I actually went to school to be a teacher. And then it wasn't until after college, kind of when the bottom fell out of the market and I was looking for work, and I realized that, oh, you know, we have the YMCA hires aquatics directors, and that's something I could do. And so I started applying and looking for it. And so I think any students that are out there, you know, if you have a passion for Parks and Rec and maybe you didn't really consider it as a profession, it's something that you should definitely look into and take into consideration. The reason I went to school to be a teacher, actually, because my mother worked for the school district and she was somewhat adamant about it. And so that's the path that I took through college. And then it turned out that I actually do use some of those skills when I'm facilitating classes and talking with people. But the biggest thing, you know, for the students is just explore it, try it out, maybe get a job at the rec center or something and see if it's something that you like. And then if you decide that it is for you, then, you know, the number one thing is just network, talk to people, get your name out there, get your internship, explore if you've got a state association, young professionals network, and what that looks like. You know, we have a student rep on our YPN, and it's a great way for her to get some experience and connect us to the universities and have everything to go into it. And then for young professionals out there, you know, if you're trying to move up, obviously you can do everything that we talked about now with the conferences and the network and the podcast and the state associations. But the biggest thing is at the end of the day, you are a caretaker for the community, but you need to take care of yourself first. So a lot of times, you know, we work when people recreate. We're working 4th of July. We're working Saturday morning. We're working Wednesday at 6 o'clock. And that can take a toll because, you know, it's like, when do you go to the bank? When do you go up north yourself? When do you go on vacation? When do you watch the fireworks when you're not watching the people to make sure no one's running too close to them? And so you've got to take care of yourself, and you've got to have great, you know, mental wellness and physical wellness and overall health. Because if you don't, you can't do your job and you can't take care of the community. And it's okay. It's okay to say no sometimes. It's okay to be honest with your team and say, hey, like, I'm really not up to it. I need to take a day. I need to take an afternoon. I need to take whatever. Because you don't want to burn yourself out. Because I've seen really good people in this field get burnt out really quick. And then they just go work, you know, wherever else. And it's like, wow, that person was definitely a loss to the field. I can see it. And so I think that it's important to look out for those things. And the other thing too is just have fun. You know, we work in recreation, and I think sometimes people need to be reminded that we shouldn't take things so seriously. You're always going to have somebody that is, you know, there's a challenging customer service situation, or there's a hiccup with staff, or these all these other things. But in my nearly 10-year career now, I can say that the good has outweighed any of those negative moments. And I've just been having fun. You know, I just, when I network with people, it's not to brush elbows and take it so seriously. It's to say, how are you doing? What are you working on? What's going on with you? When I go to a conference, it's, you know, it's not just to be seen and be seen there. It's to actually learn and engage and go to the expo center and be silly and kind of run around and just enjoy what we do, because no one else does what we do. No one else does what we do. I think that that's really an important thing, is to just have fun with it and take time for yourself and understand that, you know, you don't want to get burned out, because if you get burned out, then you're just going to lose all of it. And, you know, maybe that job somewhere that's 9 to 5 sounds great. You got steady hours. You're not supervising anyone. But, I mean, do you really want to be stuck in an office all day? Do you really want to sit behind a desk, or would you rather deal with the frustrations and then know that, hey, at least this afternoon I get to go to all my sites and be outside and drive around, you know, stop at Starbucks along the way, get a coffee. It's all good.
Yes, exactly. I love that advice, and so many people need to hear that, because we work so hard to do what we do, to every day make our lives a little bit better, the work that we do better, which in turn helps everybody else around us. But I've seen that too, where it's easy to get carried away and take it so seriously because we care. And next thing you know, we're getting sick. We're missing days. We are just in a bad mental state, and we can practice what we preach, and we should do that. We should get out in nature. We should exercise and just make sure that we're taking care of what we said. So I love what you have to say there. All right. So I want to get into how you think the field of parks and recreation is changing over time. So maybe you can talk about what things that you've seen in the past 10 years working in the field. And then also just talk about, how do you think that those changes are impacting the professionals like yourself, and what will be required to succeed as we see more changes?
Yeah, and this is actually a really great question, and I'm glad that you asked it. Park and Rec is changing. America is changing. Everything is changing about our society, our culture, everything that goes into it. And what's not changing is people's love for being outside. you go to a park and you've got young, socially conscious individuals. You've got seniors that are now active older adults. You know, you've got people coming in from all races, religions, creeds, everything. And everybody is at the park and everybody is enjoying it. And they're all sitting outside and they're walking and they're hiking and they're picnicking. And everything's going into it. And so while society shifts, the one thing that stays constant is that who doesn't love a picnic? Who doesn't love going to the beach or taking their dog to the dog park, or in Wisconsin going to the, you know, the beer garden or just the playground? And so I think that the more that the world around us changes, the more that we can really just embrace the similarities that all of us feel through the field of parks and recreation, and we can become more diverse in our offerings and our opportunities through the community as the needs arise, knowing that everyone's going to want to come to the park. We can change through our constants, and we can be that foundation of a community, a gathering space. Someone's going to need to have a wedding reception. People are going to need baby showers. You know, whatever your religious event is, whatever, you know, when you're happy, you go for a walk in the park. When you're on a date, you go for a walk in the park. When you're sad and heartbroken, you go for a walk in the park. And it's always there. It's always embedded in society. And as we can be good stewards of that, no matter what society is telling us is right or wrong, the flavor of the week and where we're coming or where we're going, that's the beauty in all this. And so I think to be successful, we need to embrace that and have an open mind and understand that while people change, no, a walk in the park will never change.
That's so true. There's so many studies about parks boosting your mood and your energy and how walking in nature can decrease depression. And it's funny to see those, and I'm not sure what you think about it either, but it's only validating everything that we have felt as children, who we just get outside and we go play and we get tired and we play tag with our friends. And it's just those little moments that over time keep us well-rounded and healthy. And I think you're exactly right. The only thing that's going to change over time, even with all of the crazy things going on right now in our world, is just that people still need parks and they rely on them for their health and well-being.
Definitely. And, you know, there's plenty of trends on the future, and it's always good to be just bought into what's going on. And I think that, you know, you got to keep an open mind to all these things, and we should, as professionals, be open to change, and we should find ourselves on the forefront of change and not the back end, because if you're on the back end of it, you're always going to be constantly changing and updating because you can't keep up with the trends. But if you get there in the front and you ride it out, then you've got some good years in there where people see you as the greatest opportunity in their life to come together and be happy and be full of joy. And so I think that, you know, that constant of being outside and that constant of keeping an open mind. And, you know, plenty of people have somewhere tacked on a wall a little button I've seen in multiple recreation apartments that says, "But we've always done it that way," with a red line through it. And you look at it and I just laugh to myself, because I think, like, you have that up, but you don't actually practice that. When push comes to shove, you might just fall back on what you've always done. And I've experienced it. I've seen it posted places where people don't want to change. And it's just not something that I see the way. And I think that is kind of, you know, the strength in millennials and the generation coming after us, is that we're so, you know, we can adapt to change so quickly because we can utilize technology to make it happen and really get on the forefront of things. And I think that as long as we embrace that, and when our time comes and when our generation truly is in all of these leadership roles and everything that happens out there, where we can maybe be in charge of the budget or have these broad sweeping abilities, you know, that's going to be big. Because I know I talked earlier about, you know, leading from any level, but there are always going to be limitations in the hierarchical structure. But as we progress as a generation beyond that, then I think we can really make Parks and Rec into that next level. And then, of course, we'll be working with the younger generation who thinks that we're dinosaurs, but we can say, hey, no, we're the first tech generation, and we will be open to what you have to say, and we will get this done so that it's good for your kids and your grandkids too.
Yes, absolutely. I hope that millennials can be that generation that really shifts the way that everyone thinks about parks and recreation, is able to bring in technology and all these digital tools to make us more efficient and effective in the way that we do our processes, but also in the way that we serve our community. And hopefully we will be better able to communicate them and engage them in a way that's never been seen before. So I definitely agree. It's exciting.
Well, and it's interesting too, because I actually had a conversation this morning. Some people were posting on Facebook about, you know, keeping families in the city of Milwaukee. Kind of, they were targeted on the east side, which for anybody that's not from Milwaukee is just kind of like the lakeside and some of these other neighborhoods. And people were talking about, you know, we want like program parks and we want playgrounds and we want all this other stuff. And so I responded to them. And I was talking with a gentleman, and I kind of gave him the whole history and breakdown of, you know, the 100-year playground program. And it was just interesting how, you know, you had this flight. You had people leaving for the suburbs, and the industry followed them into the suburbs. And then obviously cities went through urban decay, and they went through all these other challenges. And then now certain areas of cities are kind of being built back up. And I guess you could say it's trendy again to kind of live in that downtown walkable area. And as people move back in, they're saying, well, where are the parks at? Where are the playgrounds? Where's everything that went into it? And it's like, well, when people before you left, the money kind of followed and cities went through a rough patch. But now there's this resurgence going on. And so, you know, we had that conversation about, you know, as millennials, I guess, move back into cities, what does that look like for the urban landscape? At the same time, being mindful of the families that never left cities, and maybe their park spaces took a hit. And so you've got that double approach to it. We're saying, okay, we've got millennials coming back. Let's, you know, the urban playground, let's get things going. Let's make sure that it's fair and socially equitable. And we're not pushing anybody out, but we're bringing back the parks that were neglected, and that's going across the entire urban landscape. So everywhere in the city, things are getting a facelift. Cities are, you know, trending again. You know, we're making a difference and moving the needle for all of our residents. But it's just interesting when people, you know, they come back and they say, well, where is it? Well, it left. It left when things left. And now they're coming back, and we have an opportunity to build it back up again as well, too. And I think something to talk about with being successful and keeping an open mind is that there are going to be culture creators outside of you. So if you're a young professional and you have all these ideas, but we know that the bureaucracy keeps us in line, and we talked about that earlier, and being patient, sometimes it's good to utilize those culture creators, people that have ideas that can do things outside of the box, but you don't want them going rogue and pushing against you and doing this, that, and the other, but saying, yeah, like, you know what? I agree. There should be X program, or this area should be redeveloped, or this, you know, this park or playground could use some TLC. Let's sit down and talk about how we can make that happen, because you might have a little bit more freedom through connections than I do. And I shouldn't be afraid of you. I should harness your civic feelings towards making this happen. And we talk about how do I, you know, keep myself up to date on everything. And, you know, especially a city like Milwaukee, where there are culture creators out there that are operating as rec departments without the oversight of, you know, bureaucracy, so they can do some really cool things. Is one of the books I read was actually called Love Where You Live, by Peter Kageyama. I hope I didn't butcher his name. But he talks about embracing those people. And so that goes back to that whole open mind thing of, okay, so my area is adjusting, it's shifting. I've got, how can I make that socially equitable so it impacts everyone in a positive way? And then how can I know my own limitations, but I'm going to reach out to somebody to work with them who maybe doesn't, and put an advisory board together and utilize them and their skill set and their passion to make the positive results happen.
Okay, I want to talk about this for a little bit longer, because I've never heard of of culture creators. Can you give me some background about who you think of when you say culture creator and maybe where that came from?
Yeah, so in Milwaukee, we had a group which is called Newwaukee. So Newwaukee, it started as a social group, just a kind of a way to, you know, for the founders to kind of make friends and interconnect millennials in the city. And Newwaukee has really grown to host quite a few really cool events. And so some of the stuff they do, like they do their own street festivals, they do their own programs in the parks, and then they operate in the metro area. And they do other events on top of, they do things for young professionals in general, like, you know, Young Professional Week and professional development. But they do host some really fun events like ice bars and all the stuff that goes into it. And so from an industry standpoint, you look at somebody who's not in your industry at all, but they're doing really unique, they're doing some really fun things. They're kind of innovative and forward thinking, and they don't really have anything that's stopping them. So, you know, they're getting the support, people are buying in, people are showing up to their events. I go to some of their events. Like, I think they're like, wow, this is a good idea. But I could see how, as they've grown, people have jumped onto their mindset. And in other areas, people are starting to have ideas. So say in other areas around Wisconsin, but they're getting pushback from their municipal government. They're getting pushback from other people about the permitting process and everything that goes into it. And so you've got this person who, you know, we'll call them a culture creator. Like, they've got some really great ideas and they can actually make it happen. They're not just at a meeting or emailing you or saying, I want to see this happen. But you're like, wow, that's great. Let's work together. Let's figure out a way to make this work. Because, you know, we in Parks and Rec, we've got the real estate, right? We're the city. We're the government. We've got the land. We've got the facilities. We've got all the, you know, most of the permits, stuff like that. And so if somebody wants to come in and like do something a little off the cuff, then maybe you should talk to them and have that conversation with them. And it doesn't always have to be something so hip and trendy. Sometimes it can just be somebody in your community who is a community advocate and a leader, and they really want to organize, you know, some kind of cleanup, or they want to start a friends group, or they want to start something grassroots. And so how do you work with them and embrace it? I mean, there's even groups outside of Milwaukee. In Milwaukee, there's one that operates in the city around Sherman Park. And we had some unrest in Sherman Park a few years ago. And this individual came through and he started a group and he just started doing programming at the parks and talking about it and getting people out there and trying to make a difference. And there was some initial pushback, and the individual can be a bit provocative on social media sometimes and push people's buttons. But at the end of the day, if you sit back and you look at his mission and what he's trying to accomplish, you're like, wow, like he saw a need in his community. And so he stepped up into it. And so if you're a parks department and this guy's showing up to your public space to do these things, like how do you embrace that and how do you work with them? And, you know, obviously toe that fine line of what this relationship looks like. So I think that, you know, we should not be afraid of people in our community that are pushing the needle a bit. And if anything, we should reach out to them and try to partner with them.
I see. So this sounds like an excellent opportunity as far as collaboration. And it all goes back to what a lot of parks recreation departments do, which is partnership. And they usually do that with schools or other nonprofits. But I agree, and this is something that I had never really thought of before, but the idea of partnering with maybe small businesses or just people on a mission to improve their community, but don't have that retail or the real estate, as you said, the parks and facilities to do so. I just think it's a great idea and an awesome opportunity for the Parks and Recreation departments and individuals and groups in the community to really make an impact.
Oh, yeah, definitely. You know, you're always going to find these people, and it's case by case. Like, you know, anybody that works in the profession, you can tell when, you know, somebody comes in and they might be, you know, difficult to work with, and you can tell when somebody is just all ideas and, you know, they're not going to really show up, but they just want you to do everything. You know, like, I'm an idea person. Well, there's legwork that's involved, but then you come across people who have the ideas and they're willing to put in the legwork. And they're like, yeah, okay, like I can work with this. You know, we can make something happen here. And so I think any professional that's listening to this probably, you know, can identify individuals in their community that we're talking about. And, you know, maybe you've got some young upstarts with big ideas in your area, and you shouldn't be afraid of it. You should embrace it and utilize it.
Yes, absolutely. All right, so this brings us to the last question. What does it mean to you to raise the bar in the field of parks and recreation?
Yeah, I think raising the bar just kind of it's a culmination of everything that we've talked about. It's bettering yourself, to better your community, to be innovative, to be progressive, to have an open mind, to not think, you know, we've always done it that way, so we have to do it that way. You know, think outside your four walls, and I mean that literally and figuratively. I have said a million times that I don't need an office. I really don't. All I need is a laptop with a Wi-Fi connection and a cell phone, and I could just go sit in a park all day. I could walk on a trail. I could sit at a coffee shop, go to a school, schedule meetings, go to neighborhood groups, do all these different things and be in the community, and I would probably be better for it than the time that, you know, I do have to be in my office to show face and do whatever that's in here. You know, maybe I would have to swing by because I need a printer. That would be kind of the only thing that I could really think of. But even still, like, you know, find a printer somewhere else. But, you know, raising the bar is just pushing the envelope. It's not being afraid to take risks. It's not being afraid of the word no. It's not being afraid of failure. And, you know, we talked about this story before about how I was part of a fundraising campaign when I worked for the Y in Louisiana. It was a triathlon fundraiser where people just swam a 500, ran a 5K, and did spin bike for 15 minutes. And it was super successful the first time around. And it was super easy. And I tried to emulate that and reproduce it in Milwaukee. And you know, one person signed up for it and they wanted to do it because they like to do something. They like to do something every day every year for their birthday. And, you know, we had one person sign up when the year before I'd raised, I think, $5,000 or $6,000. But I learned from that. I learned so much. Like, how I didn't learn anything from it being easy. All I learned is that it feels good to be successful and have your name up on the board and start a campaign hitting your goal before the official kickoff, basically. I learned a lot from that failure. And you got to put yourself outside your comfort zone, and you've got to grow, and you've got to constantly be pushing the envelope in a way that just makes you better and makes your community better for it. And have an open mind, and don't fear change, and don't be afraid to ask. And I think that, you know, for some people, there is comfort in, you know, the status quo. And if you're like that and you're successful and your community needs are met, then that's okay. But if you want to raise the bar and you want change, you just can't be afraid of everything that comes with it. And whatever your status quo is now, at some point in your career or your life or the history of your organization, your current status quo was not what it is. It was beyond that, or below it, is what I'm trying to say. So someone raised the bar to get you to where you are today, and then that's it. So if you want to go beyond that, you need to just smash through it.
That is awesome advice, and I so appreciate your insights today. And I think that this is a great conversation for any young professionals or students who are looking to get into the field, but it's also a great reminder for those who are already in leadership positions and just trying to make the work that they do and the lives of those around them a little bit better. So thank you so much. And I want to get into just one last thing. If you have any resources or links or things that people should check out, where would you send them to? Are there any websites or books or resources that you have that we can share?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, I really enjoy Facebook. So the NRPA Young Professionals Network, the Leadership Development Network through NRPA. I think that those are great resources. Obviously, NRPA itself or your state associations, things that are going into it. The book I referenced earlier, Love Where You Live, Creating Emotionally Engaging Places. It's a really quick read. And I actually got it off the recommendation of another young professional. And so I would recommend that book. Mentor Leadership by Tony Dungy has been a great book for me. That's all about putting your team first and kind of the upside down triangle. So the supervisor isn't at the top, they're at the bottom supporting everybody else that works for them. I really enjoy that. I'm going to say Becky Talks Parks is an amazing resource. I just met you and I've been looking through your site and you've got some really cool stuff going on. So I'm excited to see, and I hope anybody that listens to this continues to check back and see what's going to be coming up in the future. But yeah, and then I think, you know, if you're in aquatics, you could do, there's NRPA Aquatics Network, there's the Association of Aquatics Professionals, and there's also different state associations that occur. And always, too, for any young professional that's out there, there's a couple scholarships that come through every year for NRPA that are a chance to get you to the annual conference. There's Young Professional Fellowship, which I actually received in 2016. There's the Student Scholarship, the Diversity Scholarship, and then the American Academy, which is kind of the foundation for NRPA. They actually do an externship. The American Academy for Park and Recreation Administration does an externship. And then they also do scholarships to NRPA Director School, Supervisor Management School. And so there's just so many resources out there. And I'm truly blessed that Wisconsin has a lot of them, but you know, look and you shall find. I would start with NRPA YPN, and we can definitely get you anywhere you need to go from there. We do monthly conference calls, and we do quite a few posts on Facebook to get people involved.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for those resources. I'm going to do my best to write all those down and put them in the notes for this show. And thank you for mentioning my website too. I appreciate it. I hope that more people find it. And as long as we keep having interviews like yours that are so inspiring and informative, I think that it will continue to be a great resource. So thank you. And thank you so much for being on my show. I love this conversation with you. And I look forward to continuing the conversation with more professionals who are dedicated to raising the bar in the field. All right, you guys, how awesome was that episode with Anthony Iraki? Thank you so much for being on the show, Anthony, and I can't wait for more people to hear your message because it's clear that you're incredibly passionate about the field and just encouraging the next generation of leaders to step up, take those necessary risks, and step into their potential. So it's really exciting to talk to like-minded professionals. And if you are one of those who would love to be on the show, maybe you have an interesting story to tell, or you have a project or event that you've done in your community that deserves to be told, please let me know. I'd love to have you on the show. That's all right now, you guys. I'm going to have another episode next week. I've got a ton of interviews lined up, and I cannot wait to share them all with you. Thanks so much for your support, and I will see you next week.